Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. With me, as always, is Kyle. And by God, this week, and maybe next week, I don't know if one of us passes out at some point in the next few hours.
Yeah, we'll see how long we've
got Eric.
Hello, I'm here.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
It's tournament time, so we had to bring our boy back.
I look forward to it all year.
If there's anybody, again, if there's anybody new to the Skodcast from last year, Eric is a Skodcast emeritus. He was on the initial iteration of the Skodcast, used to write for the old Start Kyle Orton blog. He joins us whenever there's a tournament, whenever there's a situation where we need a third vote to break up the me and Travis debates. So we are always glad to have him back with
us. I also hypothetically discuss returning to the actual podcast every season, and then the Bears fucking suck, and I don't know.
It's true. Yeah,
that's right.
He's always like, I could join for the post games, and we're like, sure, we believe you, son. And then like by like week two, he's like, nope, I can't do it.
A watchable game of football 2 weeks in a row.
He remembers he fucking hates this team, and then he's like, I don't want to talk about him. Yeah. Jeez.
So anyways, Christ. We had a little break here because I couldn't get my shit together the week that we wanted to record, and then Travis took a vacation.
How dare you?
I didn't even know that we had a PTO policy on the Skodcast, that he's allowed to exit the content mines and go do something with his loving family. So, yeah. But we talked about this, when we set this up. We said we were going to do a tournament. This year was going to be the worst Bears decisions of our lives. And you know, I had made some regions for that, like free agent decisions, blah, blah, blah. But what we ultimately decided was that doing regions was artificially inflating some things into the tournament that really did not, you know, are you fine? If you fuckers are all turning off your camera, I guess I'll.
I never turned on a camera.
I know you.
I turned mine off because you're getting spotty and I'm getting worried.
Okay, all right. I'll turn the camera off so that our Iowa internet doesn't glitch out. Okay,
thank you.
The people can't even see these cameras.
They don't know what we're talking about.
Anyway, because you know, I had some free agent decisions, and then we had the same problem when we did the worst Bears tournament. Is that the Bears' biggest sins in free agency are generally not playing at all? So like it's.
Well, you know, Gerald Everett. Some of those situations, you have to have the regions, or else it's going to be are, you know, 16 shitty quarterbacks. Who's
right.
The worst one?
Yeah, I think there was a good argument for needing the regions the last 2 years, but I think and also last year's tournament, I thought the regions were very important, so that it wasn't 16 different losses to Green Bay that we were debating. But this year, was Gerald Everett a horrible decision all around? Yes, but at the same time, can you really compare a bottom tier contract to a backup tight end to anything else on this list? I really don't think you can. So I dropped the regions idea. I just did seeds, and I dropped a lot of the things that I felt like were just being put in there solely so that I could fill out a region. So we have 16 nominees split into 8 matchups. And I think we're just ready to go. I think with matchup number one, is that.
Let's do it. Yeah, we got a lot of great feedback from people. I love reading all of your emails and your comments. I'm still shocked that there are comments on Spotify. Every time those pop through, I'm like, what the hell?
Like, I didn't know you could comment on Spotify.
I did not know you could do that, but I read them all. They're fantastic. Some of them, I didn't get another Doug Flutie rant quite, but I did get the Bears not drafting Joe Montana recommendation, and you gotta let that go, brother. You gotta let that go.
Also, I know that this is a cop-out, especially with like the Patrick Mahomes thing, when people are like, he wouldn't have done that in Chicago, which I don't know that I believe that, but I think Joe Montana very specifically and that era of football, that man would not have done that in Chicago, guys. Like, Bill Walsh designed an entire offense that revolutionized football and drafted Joe Montana when no one else would even consider him, because Joe Montana fit that offense so well. The Bears were not running the West Coast offense. He'd have taken 50 sacks a year, only throwing on 3rd and 10 after 2 Walter Payton handoffs, and he would not be remembered today. So you got to let that one go, buddy. But in true Bears fan fashion, I do appreciate that you've held on to it for 40 years.
Yes. Like, that's what's important to me, is that all of you guys out there have held on to this shit for so long, because that's what makes us Bears fans, right?
That's exactly. It's that nothing
what else have we had
drama
to
is
to.
Forever. Yeah.
It's the bubbling pitch of resentment in our lower intestine. That's right. That's Bears fans.
Yeah.
So all right, let's do it, man. Get, like,
leading
give
it
me
off
a matchup.
With the first matchup, one seed, one of the one seeds versus a four seed. And I think everyone expects this one to appear, and obviously I think this one seed's going to be a strong contender all the way through, but obviously you got to start off with the decision to draft Mitchell Trubisky second overall in the 2017 draft over Patrick Mahomes, over Deshaun Watson, which was the wrong decision and before it became the right decision for the wrong reasons. But the decision to draft Mitch Trubisky, always going to be a strong contender versus our four seed here, which was the 2012 draft when the Bears decided to draft Shea McClellan over Chandler Jones, if we wanted to keep it specifically to defensive ends, but also just any viable football player. There were other options.
A draft where Kyle and I actually threw out like four different options.
We were
ended up being good NFL players.
I can't remember. I mean, there's lots of Bears drafts where I'm like, what the fuck, when the pick is made. But I think that was one of the few where pretty much everyone we wanted was still on the board. Yeah. We were like, wow, I can't believe how well this draft has fallen for the Bears. And then they made that decision, and it was like, what? Who even is that person?
Well, and the very fun thing about Shea McClellan is that, like, he didn't even fit in the system. It wasn't even, you know, the typical Bears. We know what position we need to fill. We just have no idea how to pick the correct person to do it. It was, there's this weird guy who's not very good, and also that we don't really have a position for in our offense. That's our boy. We need him.
Like, when you know it's good when you're at first, you're like, who is this guy? And then the very next question you have is like, what position is he going to play? Like, you don't even know. Because, I mean, Kendall Wright, not that Kendall Wright was anything great, but Kendall Wright was a guy that we would have liked. They could have used a decent possession receiver. Chandler Jones was obviously the guy that we wanted in that spot. But David DeCastro, Riley Reiff. Donta Hightower was Travis's guy. I know that.
Mine was Hightower and DeCastro. Yeah.
Travis was like, this is clearly going to be Brian Urlacher's last season. Why wouldn't you just take a guy who's going to be an all-pro linebacker for 10 years, as Hightower ended up being? There was Whitney Merciless, who was a useful player for a couple years. Kevin Zeitler is still fucking playing guard.
Also, Harrison Whitney Smith. Merciless has one of the coolest names in NFL history.
Yes. Harrison Smith is still playing safety for the fucking Vikings. Like, there were so many options, and they went with Shea McClellan, and it was a bad idea instantly. So, Mitch Trubisky.
Oh, we've got if we want to talk about bad draft decisions.
I feel like we need to just highlight what Eric said, though, also about scheme, because that, as far as bad decisions go with Shea, you know, what came out years later was that they had brought in Mel Tucker and then basically told him to run a defense that he didn't want to run and he didn't know how to run. And Shea McClellan would have actually fit the defense that Mel Tucker would have run if they hadn't interfered.
That was the Phil Emery era. And Shea McClellan, I think that's what gives him even a fighting chance here against Mitch, is that he's emblematic of the entire Phil Emery era as GM, because Emery kept, as I've said this before, he kept saying things and signing players and drafting players that led you to believe that, especially on defense, their goal was to be a modern NFL defense that shifted fronts, shifted looks, kept you guessing. Very similar to what we expect Dennis Allen to actually do and what Dennis Allen has done in New Orleans. They kept talking about this shift in defense that I thought was like very advanced and that was going where the NFL was actually going. They were shifting hard away from the Tampa 2 of Lovie, where it was the same five plays every time, you just hoped you had the players to run it to perfection. But then you find out at the same time, Phil Emery was drafting all these players, talking about all this, but what he was telling Mel Tucker to do was run this basic static Lovie Smith defense that he didn't have the players to run and didn't know how to run. So it just didn't, none of it made any sense. You weren't drafting players for your coaches. You were telling your coaches to run a scheme that didn't make sense for what they even want to do, let alone for the players they had. It was bad process, bad pick, bad outcome, bad everything. It was really just he was a bad decision, a bad pick that really sums up that entire era. And I think that's why he is a contender, even though I think, you know, in many arguments, the Mitch Trubisky pick will go down in history, not in terms of actual player himself, but just in terms of the opportunity cost as the single worst draft pick possibly in NFL history. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, people talk about
I don't know how it could possibly not be.
Right, and because I've said this before, but you talk about Jamarcus Russell. Obviously, he's a worse player than Mitch Trubisky was. But if you look at the quarterbacks available in the 2007 draft, you know, is history any better if the Raiders take Brady Quinn? I know at the time Lane Kiffin wanted them to take Calvin Johnson, who was obviously a great player. But, like, does anyone think even the best wide receiver in the NFL on the 2007 fucking Raiders was going to make a difference? Same with Ryan Leaf. You know, Ryan Leaf was awful, but he went after Peyton Manning. He didn't go before him. And the next quarterback off the board was Charlie Batch. So, but then you have Mitch Trubisky. It's the one opportunity where you had a quarterback on the board. It was the first time since 1983 when all those teams passed on Dan Marino and took other quarterbacks that weren't Dan Marino, where you could literally say, like, all you had to do was make one other choice. The guy was there, and you picked the wrong one.
Well, and you know, equally critically, there were two quarterbacks everyone agrees should have gone first. You know, obviously, right. Bullet dodged on Deshaun Watson. They traded up.
Yeah. Trade up does factor.
Like, it is a big... They gave away quite a lot in order to be able to draft a guy nobody else wanted one spot earlier.
Yeah, we will have... I feel like a lot more to say about this one later on. As much as I hate the Shea McClellan pick, I don't think it stands a chance against
drafting. I think it's going to be tough sledding for anybody against the Mitch pick. And I think I'm going to try to devil's advocate and make a strong argument pretty much for anybody who does get matched up against it because of it, just so we're not boring and predictable. But
you know what my true feelings are about.
Oh, I know.
Don't worry. Someone is going to devil's advocate this.
Yeah, I know.
Sure.
I already know. Unlike last year, where I think we all came into it with a completely open mind and were genuinely surprised by the game that ended up being the one that we picked for the worst Bears game. Travis has a stalking horse. He's got a dog in this race just as strongly as he had with Rex Grossman in the worst Bears tournament. He knows who he wants to win this fight. So
I have the article pulled up right now, and it is great. I can't believe how prescient I was in this fucking thing.
Okay, well, we'll get to that in a little bit. That down boy. Let's not jump the gun. So I guess... putting it to a vote here, I am advancing the decision to draft Mitch Trubisky over the decision to draft Shea McClellan. Eric, must I?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think it's you know, I wish it was a better fight. I do hate the Shea McClellan pick. I remember being angry about the Bears in those days very fondly. You can't beat drafting Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah,
draft decisions. It's no one
close,
can.
Which is saying something, because the Shea pick,
it is a truly terrible pick.
Okay, and then the next matchup in this region, our 2 seed versus our 3 seed. So in the 2 seed, we have the Cedric Benson versus Thomas Jones saga, really, starting with the decision that Jerry Angelo made looking at the 2004 Bears, a team whose best wide receiver was David Terrell, a team who had no offensive linemen to speak of, that gave up over 70 sacks, I believe. He looked at that roster and decided that the real problem was Thomas Jones, and then decided to use the fucking 4th overall pick on a replacement for Thomas Jones, and then the replacement that he chose ended up being Cedric Benson. And then you get everything that was Cedric Benson's Bears career after that, the contract holdout, the fumbling in the Super Bowl, the fact that even after all of that, they still forced out Thomas Jones and forced a trade to the Jets, that really, truly ended up being a staggeringly awful trade. I think, did I lay the math out for that trade in the chat?
You did. If you can find it in the chat.
Yeah, it's buried.
I didn't
realize. It involves Eric Weddle. One of our favorite safeties of all time. So,
okay. So I'm going to go to the 2007 NFL draft. because yeah.
you do your searching. There's one thing I want to make our audience aware of, because we've gone back and forth over this quite a bit. This is kind of a thorny one because it ties into other bad decisions. This era of Bears football is so dense with terrible happenings that are all tangled together. You know, kind of stemming from Rex Grossman, but encompassing several other issues. So we're still waffling as we speak on, you know, how expansive this is going to be. So let's let Kyle deliver his spiel.
So the 43rd pick in the 2007 NFL draft, or no, sorry, not 43rd, sorry, the 37th overall pick in the 2007 NFL draft. The San Diego Chargers selected Eric Weddle, safety from Utah, who went on to play for 14 seasons in the NFL, was a 5-time All-Pro and a 6-time Pro Bowl selection, won a Super Bowl with the Los Angeles Rams. Probably one of the best three safeties of this century.
Yeah, but listen, it's not like there was a safety on the worst Bears of our lifetime, or responsible for the worst Bears game of our lifetime.
Have the Bears had a need at safety in this time? So
when have they ever needed one of those?
The Bears definitely didn't run through a bunch of awful safeties that caused us massive embarrassment.
Here's the description of how the number 37th overall pick landed with the San Diego Chargers in the first place. Washington traded this selection to the New York Jets for the 35th overall selection in the 2006 NFL draft. So Washington traded this pick to the Jets. The Jets traded this selection to Chicago for Thomas Jones and the 63rd overall selection in this year's draft. So the Bears didn't even get a true second round pick for Thomas Jones coming off of two fantastic seasons where he also led them to the Super Bowl. They got a pick swap in the second round. The pick that the Bears got put them in position where they could have drafted Eric Weddle. And I think, as much as we all disliked Cedric Benson, if the Bears had turned Thomas Jones into Eric Weddle, that would have softened the blow for us. It wouldn't even be...
You got something great, you needed it, whether you wanted it. At least it was good.
Yeah, and then the Bears ended up replacing Cedric Benson with Matt Forte, and we would have had Matt Forte and Eric Weddle, and, you know, I think we would have lived. But that's not what happened. The Bears then traded pick number 37 to San Diego for pick number 62, pick number 93, pick number 167, and a third round pick in the 2008 NFL draft. And hey, that's pretty good, right? I mean, on the charts, I think that's probably a good trade for the Chicago Bears. What did the Bears do with those picks, you might ask? Well, with the 62nd overall pick, the Chicago Bears drafted Dan Bazewin. Remember Dan Bazewin? No, you fucking don't, because he never took a snap in a Bears uniform.
I think he appeared in one of the bad Bears players brackets. Either the first one or the second one.
Yeah. Their third round selection, the 93rd overall pick, was used to select Garrett Wolf, gadget running back, who sucked. Their fifth round selection was used to draft a safety, Kevin Payne, who, if you remember Kevin Payne, you might remember was not as good as Eric Weddle. And then let's see here, 2008 NFL draft. What did they do with the third round pick that they got from San Diego? Let's take a look. That's a good question. Just to complete that trade. I know I looked it up before, but we're going to
look. I like it when you bring me to completion, Kyle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Honestly, the fact that Kyle doesn't remember this information means whoever this fucking guy is, he must be really forgetful.
I was going to say, usually it's right off the top of Kyle's head.
Drafted Marcus Harrison, defensive tackle, from Arkansas. I do remember the name, but I don't even know if
legendary third-round pick for the
Bears. Let's see here. Harrison stepped up for the Chicago Bears and had a productive rookie season, rotating in and playing extensively alongside Tommy Harris. I feel like Harrison probably wrote that himself, because I sure don't remember this guy. Apparently,
also, I feel like it's not that hard to look okay playing next to Tommy Harris.
He was a Bear. Wrote that. He was a Bear for 3 years, and he had a grand total of 3 career sacks. So the Bears forced Thomas Jones out of the picture so that they could clear room for Cedric Benson, who didn't deserve it, and they managed to turn Thomas Jones into four picks that they used on garbage players that amounted to nothing, when they could have used the pick that they got for him to draft an all-pro safety that would have filled the spot for 14 fucking years. And all of this, again, because Jerry Angelo looked at the worst offensive football in 2004. The only, and any Bears fan who watched that team that year could tell you the only thing that offense had going for it at all anyways was Thomas Jones. And that was the thing that he singled in on as the worst thing, as the worst part of that offense and the part that needed replacing with the fourth overall pick in the draft. There were a million places. And as we've said before, you could have used that pick on Aaron fucking Rodgers if you wanted to. But they used that pick on Cedric Benson and set off just a never-ending sequence of catastrophes. And yeah, that's why the Cedric Benson-Thomas Jones debate is on there. Have I even said the second opponent in this matchup yet?
No.
I don't think I have.
No.
So that's,
after that, I don't know that you need to.
That's Cedric Benson versus Thomas Jones, and its contender in the third seed is their decision in 1998 to draft Penn State running back Curtis Enos over Randy Moss, because Curtis Enos smiled politely and did well in his interviews and showed up to all of his meetings on time, and Randy Moss famously slept through a pre-draft meeting and did not meet with the Bears when he was supposed to.
Indeed. I mean, so to me, this is more drafting Curtis Enos and less about Randy Moss. Randy fell quite a bit further, even though he was quite clearly ungodly talented.
But the
most important thing we could say here is that Joe Paterno, Curtis Enos's own coach, said, "Hey, don't draft this psychopath. Not an NFL player, and also he is legitimately insane." And the Bears were like, "Well, don't listen to him."
I believe, if I remember correctly, Curtis Enos had a girlfriend who was very into voodoo and witchcraft and cursed some of his teammates. It was a story at the time.
Yes.
So,
Curtis Enos
is that why all of this has happened to us? Is that where all of this comes
from?
Can
we blame the Bears?
Is this Curtis Enos's girlfriend's fault?
Voodoo girlfriend? That's a good question. That's a good question.
So, the thing about this is I don't think the Curtis Enos thing rates next to Cedric Benson versus Thomas Jones, only because to me, Randy Moss doesn't come into the equation. I don't think the Bears were ever thinking of drafting Randy Moss, specifically because he basically made it clear he didn't want to be a Bear.
Well, and I also, you know, as much shit as I give the Bears for loving players, like, oh, he paid for his own flight, oh, he looks so nice in his prep. Like, you did sleep through a meeting and not go to it, man. Like, that costs you points. Sorry.
Randy Moss turned out to be Randy Moss. For as much as I love the guy, he was a deeply troubled youth.
Yeah, like character concerns are real.
A lot of problems. Those were real concerns that manifested into real problems in his career.
He was just also very, very good at catching footballs.
Right. And also, like, I mean, we can all be very proud and impressed of him for overcoming those things and becoming, you know, the guy who he is today, who everybody loves and universally respects. But he went through 5 to 7 years of, like, maybe becoming Antonio Brown. So it wasn't unfounded.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Okay. I would agree that I would vote Benson on through over that for sure.
Also, I just think all three of us really like Thomas Jones.
Yeah, well, why would you not?
So I think Thomas Jones is going to win.
Yeah.
If I hadn't just renamed the group chat the other day, I would be renaming it in honor of Curtis Enos's goth ex-girlfriend. But we can't do it that frequently. I'll keep it for later.
When we get tired, yeah. So when we get tired of We Demand Alien Sex. So, okay, so that region, we have our final four contest, or our final four matchup set. Next up, our next one seed coming up, and you can bet this is Travis's baby.
He's been ready for years.
This is the shit right now. It's moving on. All right.
The debate that he has had. So we have, we don't have to really waste a lot of time on this first round matchup. This is Mark Trestman over Bruce Arians, the four seed that I came up with for here. And it's not going to advance. We know it's not. It's a sacrifice. It has no chance. But I do think that signing Nate Davis over the explicit non-endorsement, I guess, of his previous head. Mike Vrabel, who has a reputation in the NFL as a guy who gets more out of bad football players and bad rosters than pretty much anyone in football, absolutely fucking loathed this person and said that he didn't like to practice. And the Bears, the reason I have Nate Davis on here, and it's just a point against Matt Eberflus, and obviously we're going to hear from Matt Eberflus again real soon. But the Nate Davis signing is emblematic of one of the major flaws so far of the Ryan Poles regime and the Matt Eberflus regime, is that they spent so much time talking about how character and quality and all of this stuff was going to be their competitive advantage, which, first of all, I never subscribed to that. Whenever some coach comes up and it's like, we're going to outwork them, we're going to outgrit them, we're going to be the one NFL team that actually works hard. Like, most of these guys aren't busting their ass all day every day anyways. Like, they need some gym teacher to come in and motivate them. I fucking hate that approach, and the Bears always fall for it. But they believed that they could get more out of Nate Davis than his own head coach, who was known specifically for motivating guys and who wanted nothing to do with him. They sign this guy, and he immediately refuses to practice. Just doesn't do it at all. Doesn't know where he's going, doesn't know the playbook, doesn't practice. Just a complete failure of a human being. We can certainly expect to see Nate Davis probably have a stronger argument in the next example of the Bad Bears tournament as on his own merits. So that's our four seed there. But I don't think anyone needs to even weigh in there. We're going to obviously send Trestman over Arians past Nate Davis.
Yeah, I don't feel like I need to expend.
Keep that powder dry. No,
keep it holstered. You'll need that.
You're going to need it later.
You're going to need the matchup against Mitch Trubisky, I assume. So yeah,
I'll throw one little nugget so that it is discussed in its own entry. Mark Trestman is the reason that I stopped being a Bears writer and podcaster for 10 years.
Right. Accurate. Yeah. We'll talk about the fallout of Mark Trestman on all of us.
There's a lot to discuss about Mark Trestman.
Yeah, we'll get there. He'll have his day. Okay, and then
specifically this decision too, because truly, it was you two trying to like pull a little bit of hope out of that hire that I think killed you completely.
It was one of those things where it was like, and it's the thing that I have refused to do with the Bears ever since, is that it was so self-evidently stupid that you tried to talk yourself out of it because they couldn't possibly have done something as stupid as it looked. There had to be some, and no, it was just exactly as stupid.
They hired a weirdo who had been exiled to Canada instead of a guy who was good.
We'll talk about this in a minute.
And the team fell apart.
That's why when they did something as self-evidently stupid as keeping Matt Eberflus last year, I didn't try to talk yourselves into, oh, maybe it's not as stupid. It was exactly as stupid as it looked, and they paid for it, and it worked out exactly as you should have expected it to.
This was the moment, I think, where we all realized, like, oh, they're actually just idiots.
They're just bad. They're not good as a football team, as an organization whose purpose is ostensibly to win games of football. They are not good.
It's why Kyle and I so often on the podcast deride people who are like, oh, you think you know more than an NFL GM?
Yeah. This one, often, yes.
Often, yeah. Actually, it's happened over and over again. They're just human beings.
Yeah, and again, that's the argument that I always get. And I get it. I come off as condescending and arrogant on account of I am smarter than everybody. But that's not even the reason I'm doing that half the time. It's that, like, I'm not saying I'm that smart. I'm just saying you're saying they can't be that stupid, and I'm here to tell you that, son, they can.
They can never be that stupid.
I'm not just talking about what the Chicago bottom looks like. And I'm not just talking about the Chicago Bears. I'm talking about the New York Jets. You know, I get people who are like, oh, you know, there were really smart NFL people who loved Zach Wilson. You think you were smarter than them? And I'm like, yeah, when it came to Zach Wilson, I was, because I was watching the Zach Wilson that actually played football at BYU, and they were talking themselves into a fictional Zach Wilson who doesn't exist. So, yeah, they can be
that
stupid.
Zach Wilson catching strays during this podcast.
Fuck you, Zach.
I think he's going to catch another stray here in a little bit when we talk about Rick Meyer. But,
right.
I've got that one locked and loaded. So, yeah, our next matchup in this, obviously Trestman is advancing over Nate.
This next one is like our first fight, I feel like.
I think it should be interesting. So, the two seed in this region, we have the decision to let Mike Martz trade Greg Olsen versus The decision to keep Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace for one more season after 2020, when everyone knew, except for the McCaskies, that they should move on. So,
we got to talk, gentlemen. I'm gonna have a dog in this fight. They are both so bad.
Yeah, and I think both of them speak to the dysfunction that is the Chicago Bears, but in different ways. Mike Martz over Olsen. Mike Martz trading Olsen is just incredible, because what other organization would let an offensive coordinator make that call in terms of trading a first-round pick, one of your best players, because he does not fit his scheme? And I think it's important to note that this was a guy who was coming off his first year as your offensive coordinator, and they ranked, 30th in total offense? This was a guy who had to get who was only your offensive coordinator because everyone thought that Lovie Smith was such a dead man walking before 2010 that they wouldn't take the job. They tried to hire Jeremy Bates, who had been Cutler's offensive coordinator in Denver.
Oh, God, I remember being hopeful that they would hire Jeremy Bates.
He turned them down because Lovie's job looked so unsafe. So Mike Martz, they had to hire Mike Martz, who no one else wanted, who had not worked in football for a couple years at that point, after burning his bridges everywhere. Lovie Smith hired him because he was Lovie Smith's old head coach in St. Louis, and Lovie Smith is a loyal person and was paying back his old head coach. So you had Mike Martz, who had been laughed out of football for a little bit, came in, let Jay Cutler suffer that beating against the New York Giants and a number of other hilarious beatings that Jay took in 2010. They finished 30th in offense. This was not like a hugely successful offensive coordinator who should have had that clout anyways, because it's true, Detroit last year probably would have let Ben Johnson call a shot like this, and you wouldn't have necessarily said that they were wrong. But the Bears let Mike Martz call this shot and trade away Greg Olsen, and then they fucking fired Mike Martz.
Well,
that same year, like, this wasn't
also
a man whose job was secure, and you let him make a roster decision of this magnitude.
It's also very important to note that they let him trade Greg Olsen because Greg didn't fit his scheme. Nobody on that team fit his scheme. The entire problem with the Mike Martz Bears was he just came in and ran his offense, and nobody was good at it,
and
he refused to change anything about it.
The other thing about the Mike Martz offense is the only time anyone has ever fit his scheme was when he had a Hall of Fame quarterback in Kurt Warner, who people once upon a time thought was a product of Mike Martz, and now it looks much more like Mike Martz was a product of Kurt Warner. He had a Hall of Fame quarterback, a Hall of Fame left tackle, and two near, or I can't remember, did Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt both get in? They're near.
Torrey Holt did. I don't think Isaac Bruce did, right?
Two all-pro wide receivers at the very least. So if your offensive scheme can only operate if you have one of the greatest left tackles of all time in Orlando Pace, and a Hall of Fame quarterback, and two all-pro caliber wide receivers, maybe your offensive scheme is just not that great.
Oh no, Torrey Holt is not in the Hall of Fame. Isaac Bruce is. Oh, weird.
I would have expected
wrong both ways.
Interesting.
So either way, but yeah. So you have Mike Martz being the Bears offensive coordinator was a joke the entire time. People would just make jokes like, "Oh, the Bears are so stupid. They hired Mike Martz," and you let that guy make a roster decision of that magnitude to trade away Greg Olsen.
Greg Olsen was a great guy. Everybody loved him. He was a great player.
He
went on to continue to play well for 10 more years. It's not like, we lost the last 3 years of Greg Olsen and that sucks. It was 10 fucking years of the guy still being a good tight end.
Yeah, and he was your quarterback's best friend, your best offensive weapon.
Matt Forte was on that team.
Well, yes, your best offensive, I guess your best receiving, I don't know, that's still...
Matt Forte was on that team.
Either way, I mean, this is a guy who then went on to, let's see here, how many, he had 6,702 receiving yards and 40 touchdowns after being traded away from the Chicago Bears as a tight end.
Also, they replaced him with nothing. There was a gaping void at tight end between Greg Olsen and Martellus Bennett.
Well, they
literally
traded him
because Mike Martz just said, "I have no use for this."
Yeah.
So of course they didn't replace him. Mike told them that he just couldn't use him.
And in Great Bears fashion, it was, I don't need a tight end who can catch, I just need tight ends who could block, and they didn't have those either.
That's right.
And then they replaced Mike Martz with Mike Tice, which was his own hilarious decision. And Mike Tice's offense, for whatever, so as such as it was, did actually ask a tight end to do stuff, and we ended up throwing footballs to Kellen Davis, and that has caused a brain bleed that Eric's never quite.
I've never gotten over it.
It's true. Sometimes Eric just wakes up.
Listen, I hate Kellen Davis so much that I bought a Martellus Bennett jersey.
That's true.
I was so excited to have a tight end.
If I know one thing about Eric, it's that he loves Matt Forte. If I know two things about Eric, it's that he hates Kellen Davis. These things are immutable. Okay, all right. So that was pretty bad, Kyle. Next up, keeping... This is actually, I'm pretty sure this is going to happen later on the list too, but basically keeping a head coach and a GM exactly one season too long and screwing up your future yet again by doing that.
Well, and not just so they keep Ryan Pace and they keep Matt Nagy and they give them two mandates, not just one. They give them the mandate that they must make the playoffs in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And they also give them the mandate that they must find the quarterback of the future. Those two goals are never compatible in the same season. You cannot do that. So that leads to them signing Andy Dalton. That leads to them drafting Justin Fields. That leads to a quarterback competition, such as it was between the two of them, that set both of them up for failure from the very beginning. And just the spiraling out of that. And then... you're changing regimes after the rookie quarterback's first year. You have a new regime coming in that clearly never wanted Justin Fields, never built around him, never attempted to develop him. It's all because, for the simplest of reasons, the McCaskies did not want to pay two coaches' salaries in 1 year. They did not want to pay two GM salaries in 1 year. And that's an amount of money that is chump change to an actual NFL ownership with actual liquidity and cash.
Well, and also an amount of money you actually may have just straight up made back if you had fielded a good football team. The thing people pay you to do.
It's crazy how that happens. If you have a good team, you'd like sell more tickets and merch, and all of a sudden you make all of that money back. The saddest part about this, and the only reason I can think that maybe... it does lose this matchup, is this is both not the first time the Bears did this same exact thing. It's not even the last. And this happened in 2020. It's only 2025, and it happened again since then, where we kept a head coach 1 year too long. They drafted a quarterback and ruined their rookie season.
Yeah, I mean, a tremendous risk. Not just like, oh, yeah, I mean, we got to have a head coach who fucking cares. Like, you have a rookie quarterback.
Yeah.
And, well, you know.
You're telling them, you have to win this year or you're going to be fired. But also, you're going to have a rookie quarterback who we as a franchise value, but will likely, like, not value with you in the future. Because you're going to be replaced. Because we want you to start the rookie and not some veteran who can, like, get you to scramble your way into the playoffs. This, it keeps happening. Like, we did it with Rex. We do it here with Justin Fields, and we've seen how that's gone. Hopefully Justin has a good year with New York. I'm still cheering for him. Like,
I wish him all the success in the world. I think after his Bear stint, you know, we're kind of forced to admit perhaps his ceiling isn't as high as we hoped it would be, but my God, we're never going to find out because he had to endure his rookie season in Chicago.
Oh, if he makes it through this year and he starts the year after, my friend, he has crossed the Alex Smith event horizon.
Travis,
which we will talk about later, next month.
Travis is really on this theory. It's going to be we'll let Travis have that later too. So yeah, I guess I don't know which one would I advance of these two. This is my first really because I think in terms of consequences, it's the Pace and Nagy decision, but in terms of just the Martz thing is so uniquely Bears, because the Bears are not the only org that is cheap and bad about retaining bad head coaches. We've seen Dallas do it. We've seen other teams keep the wrong coach too long. But I can't think of any other team that has allowed a lame duck, terrible, no clout, no good, very bad, horrible offensive coordinator trade away what should have been a core building block and what every other team in the NFL recognized as a core building block. Like that. I think almost the uniquely bad nature of that decision, you let that person with that power make that decision for you. Because, I mean, in a well-run organization, if you have a guy of Mike Martz's standing, or lack thereof, who makes a demand like that, I mean, like, even just like Kyle Pitts in Atlanta, let's say. He's been somewhat of a disappointment, but he's still one of the most talented tight end prospects in the NFL. He's a guy that most teams would find some use for him. And let's say if Atlanta's offensive coordinator was currently, let's say it's Luke Getsy. Luke Getsy's the offensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons.
Hell yeah.
And he was like, you have to trade Kyle Pitts because I can't make him work in my scheme. The Falcons, who are not a model organization, would be like, okay, well, that's fucking stupid, and you don't have that kind of clout, so figure it out, or we'll just fire you.
Yeah.
That's what would happen. That's what would happen in any sane organization with any competent young tight end and an offensive coordinator who's lucky to have the job in the fucking first place. But the Bears let they let Mike Martz set his balls on the table and trade away Greg Olsen. And I just can't think of any other organization that would have let that kind of stupid thing happen. So I think that's why that's my vote there.
I also think that's my pick, but for a slightly different reason. And I think it's because when these things get as close as this, I'm going to lean towards the one that was, at that exact moment in time, just an awful decision. Like that one decision.
Right, if there's no hindsight.
One second.
Yeah,
hindsight, no foresight. Just, was it terminally stupid at the time? And the Martz trading Greg Olsen was just as stupid right now as it was at that moment. We were all like, that was absolutely moronic. And keeping Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, there was some logic to it. We talked ourselves into like, well, you know, Matt Nagy's supposed to be good on offense. He had all those flashes his first season. Like, is it, if the Bears fired him, aren't they just going to hire a defensive head coach? That's what they always do. Like, it's the cascade of effects that happened after it that made this even more stupid. Whereas trading Greg Olsen was just absolutely moronic when it happened, and it just got worse. It still stings as bad today as it did the day that we did.
Yeah. Well, and with Nagy, there was always some of that. You know, now I think we know, you know, unequivocally it was both of them. But it was like, oh, was this Mitch's fault? Was it Nagy's fault? You know, we never really knew if we'd seen the whole picture. So at least you could kind of be like, well, I mean, okay, I guess there's something to find out here. Nothing to find out about whether or not trading Greg Olsen was good.
Yeah.
He was a great player and a great person, and he went on to have a very successful career afterwards. And I'm happy for him that he got out of here, but it was a very, very bad decision to let him.
And Mike Martz was bad, and we knew it, and the whole NFL knew it, and the only people, I guess, who didn't were in the Bears front office.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I think sounds like we're unanimous then, so we are... We're going to advance Mike Martz trading Greg Olsen. That gets to go up over Trestman versus Arians. So I think Travis has got that one locked and loaded. So we'll get to that here in a bit. We'll move on to our next 1-4 matchup. And yeah, the number one seed in this region, the most recent of all of the decisions in this tournament. And that was a decision to keep Matt Eberflus last year. And we all knew when it happened. We all knew why it happened. It was for the same fucking reason that the Pace Nagy thing happened. We all knew that on one side of the equation, was it was the obvious decision to move on. The best head coaching candidate available in that market was Ben Johnson, and the whispers were hot and heavy of what eventually ended up happening, which is that he wanted the Bears job. He wanted it so bad. He would take it. All you had to do was offer it to him. You had, apparently you had Kevin Warren, your own team president, pushing for it. David Kaplan has said that Ryan Poles pushed for it last year. You can say what you want about David Kaplan. He does tend to be right when he gets those kind of sources. His opinions are ass, but his sources are good.
Yeah, sources are impeccable.
We had the entire fan base, the entire NFL world was aligned on one side, and that every single thing pointed to you have the perfect opportunity to jettison this doofus and you should take it. And the only other side thing, the only thing on the other side of the scale was McCaskey don't want to pay two coaches in same year. And we all knew from the beginning which side of the scale was going to win. With everything else against it, we knew it was going to happen. We knew exactly what the outcome was going to be. We knew that we were just putting all they were doing was postponing firing Matt Eberflus for 1 year because they were going to have to fucking fire him. But, and I think this is the only reason this one might not end up winning in the end, they somehow got a fucking mulligan on almost all of this.
Yeah.
They still got Caleb Williams, even though we've heard it was leaked that Caleb, because of Matt Eberflus, strongly considered trying to find a way to force his way out of Chicago because he had the same doubts and the same misgivings that we all had. And it should have cost them Ben Johnson, but Ben Johnson was smarter than the Bears organization and was like, you know what?
This is not hard, for the record.
Yeah, yeah. He was like, you know what? I'll just wait this out because I bet that job will come open again in a year.
But Ben That's Johnson's exactly. people this last season just leaking a bunch of shit to the press like,
all season
really
long.
He wanted to be the head coach.
He really wanted
he
to be there.
He still seems
he
to want to
still
be the
likes
head
coach. That, he still likes that Caleb Williams, you know, if you really wanted to pair. So the only thing that might salvage it is that they somehow didn't cost themselves Ben Johnson. They somehow didn't cost themselves Caleb Williams. But the scale, if we're just chalking with what Travis said with Greg Olson, if we're judging the decision with the information we had at hand at the time, there was the significant risk that making that decision when they did was going to cost them both of those things.
Yep.
And they still did.
Yeah. Because well, and I mean, I think that comes into play more heavily when we're close. But, like, it's very important here, too, it, like, at least, you know, kind of like we said, in defense of Matt Nagy, it was like, there's unknowns here. There was nothing to learn about what Matt Eberflus was going to do.
Yeah.
There, it
was
wasn't like, oh, we're giving him another chance.
Through 2 years.
It was, we know this guy is a high school gym teacher. He sucks ass. He's not going to win anything. He might ruin Caleb Williams. But, you know, let's just keep him around anyway. We'll see.
Yeah, because otherwise the Bears, and it's not like he was even the highest paid coach in the NFL. I think he probably had a bottom 10 NFL coach salary, and the McCaskey still couldn't take the fucking hit.
Yeah, I also want to mention, I mean, you brought up the counterpoint, which makes sense, that eventually things did work out. We got the head coach we wanted. We got the quarterback we wanted. We even got Roma Dunze in there. But my counterpoint to that is, Kyle, I've told you before what the most painful sporting event I've ever watched was, the one that made me physically ill. Do you remember what that was?
Was it watching Michigan State drive the ball down Iowa's throat?
That's number two. That's number two. Number one is actually the Cubs winning game seven of the World Series.
Oh, of the World Series. Yes.
It was, even though they won, it was easily the most devastating shit I have ever watched in my life, and I wanted to throw up multiple times during that game. Physical pain at the decisions that were being made, at watching Aroldis Chapman throw 80-mile-per-hour sliders that didn't slide. Like, even though that ended so well, so wonderfully, the whole game was just absolute torture. And I feel the same way about this. Like, yes, it did end okay. We got our guy a year too late. We still have Caleb Williams. He hopefully isn't ruined. But the pain of what we went through here is still very real. Like, it's almost worse because we had to watch that whole season thinking, oh my God, like, is Ben Johnson just going to look at this now after a year and be like, it's not worth it?
Well, and just, yeah, and I mean, and I've never seen a coach I mean, Matt Eberflus put in arguably the worst head coaching performance we've ever seen. Yeah. Because, you know, there were, like...
This Bears team was one play away from 5-2.
And
then Eberflus' coaching blew three divisional games all by itself.
Yeah. And there was the Fail Mary and all of that traced back. I mean, it's sometimes it's lazy of fans. A lot of times it's lazy of fans to be like, ah, that stupid head coach cost us again, because it's easier for fans psychologically to just say, like, if we just didn't have this idiot, things would be fine, when really there's holes everywhere, because if you embrace the reality, you know you're farther away than you think. But it's very hard to look at that Bears team and not think, like, if they had just had any other head coach, they'd have been fine last year.
They were a handful of coin flips away from an acceptable record.
Yep.
Anyway, so that's I don't think I've even said who this matchup is against. So the sacrifice again, just like Nate Davis, this four seed the sacrifice.
I don't know. Here's the deal. We both took this very personally, Kyle.
We did,
and it was, as far as bad decisions go, this was blindingly stupid in the moment, and it did end up looking worse. It merits discussion.
Yeah. So our four seed here is the decision to cut Charles Leno. And that one, Travis is right. That one, we did take that personally, because in our entire life, the Bears have always been searching for a quality left tackle.
Yeah.
They found one in the seventh round. He started every single game from 2015 to 2020. Never missed a game, was always at the very least average, a lot of times better than that, and they let a bunch of dumbass meatheads on the internet talk them out of keeping this man because he wasn't violent enough, and they drafted Tevin Jenkins, a college right tackle, moved him to left tackle, a move that we hate to begin with, and then they cut Charles Leno without even sticking around to see if the Tevin Jenkins thing was going to work out. Spoiler, it did not. He didn't even practice as a rookie. So... that was a truly bad decision as well. It really.
I actually maintain that Tevin Jenkins is not real. I don't think he's a real person.
Still
it's an elaborate charade.
Really existed.
Certainly, his NFL free agency was reflective of that.
Oh,
so far.
Tev, yeah, you got absolutely fucked out there, didn't you, buddy? This was part of kind of a package deal. The Bears were cutting salary. And they also cut Kyle Fuller, which at the time we thought was an atrocious move as well, but ended up actually being smart, right? He fell off dramatically the next season. This was not the case with Charles Leno.
I will never give the Bears credit for saying, oh, they saw it coming. No, they didn't know. They were just getting rid of money, and they got lucky on that one.
Charles Leno had three extremely good years after this, and then he tore, I believe, his ACL, and he didn't play at all last year. I'm not sure if he's going to play again, but he was still extremely good. He's basically Braxton Jones, like, as far as quality goes overall, not the same players, but, yeah, I mean, essentially, like, a very competent left tackle. For years, the Bears had been drafting assholes in the seventh round, and expecting them to work out, and it finally happened. Like, it actually fucking worked, which, like a one in a million shot that this ever pans out, and it did. You got the guy. He's, like, not just okay, he's good. He's a good left tackle, and you fucking cut him because of cap concerns. And they had other options on that roster.
They kept Jimmy Graham.
Jimmy Graham's corpse was on this fucking team.
Yeah. So
that being said, I don't think it moves on.
No, I can't.
No. Also, it's a fun little fact I had forgotten until I looked at the bracket earlier this week was that Charles Leno had proposed to his girlfriend at midfield after beating the Packers, and I think that's adorable, and it's a shame to get rid of such a nice fella.
I agree. It's just like, just a great football player at a position we never have a good player at, and just a good guy.
Well, and I guess to add to it, you got rid of this guy, you left yourself, with a complete question mark at left tackle in a season in which you knew at some point you would be starting a rookie quarterback whose biggest shortcoming in college and as it turned out in the NFL is that he takes bad sacks.
Yep. Okay. So there's like a lot of psychic damage from this one.
Yeah.
Let's put those head to head then. You know, the risk there obviously was what's going to happen to this kid. They literally watched all of this shit happen to Justin Fields, and then they decided to do it again to Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
Making it an even worse decision. It's not like, oh, well, you know, we got burned, but now we know. They got burned, and then they were like, that stove looks really nice. I'm just going to slam my hand down on top of it. Yeah.
It really does boost the keeping Matt Eberflus idea, because this is just not the first, it's not the second time you've done it. You know this is wrong, and you're gonna fucking do it again.
Well, and you did it with the last fucking guy. Not even like, oh, 10 years ago we did this, and now we're doing it again.
5 years.
Yeah. literally, the first opportunity you had to make the same mistake over again, you did.
Yep.
Like, you could not possibly have shown that you are incapable of learning new information any better than they did there. So yes, we're obviously advancing Eberflus over Charles Leno, but I'm glad that we, just like with the Nate Davis thing, just like with the Shane McClellan, I'm glad we have given enough time to air out exactly why those decisions were so stupid. Because it's not ever just as simple as cut good player or draft bad player. It's about the, because you know, sometimes you'll have a good process and a bad outcome, and sometimes you'll have a bad process and a good outcome. But it's important to note how many times the Bears specifically get bad outcomes from what was transparently bad process at the beginning.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't always work. Most players don't go to the Hall of Fame. 31 teams have to lose a Super Bowl every year. But it's astonishing how often the Bears manage to, you know, it's not a coin flip, it's not a gamble, it's not one of those things. It's, you are dumb and bad, and you do dumb and bad things.
Yeah. So our next matchup in this region, our 2 seed, is the Chase Claypool Experience. Trading a second round pick for a wide receiver that Pittsburgh, home of making malcontent wide receivers work, did no longer want it. Trading for a wide receiver at the NFL trade deadline when you were on pace to get the number one overall pick. So many just bad decisions all around, and then the player that you ended up trading for was one of the single worst.
Was later asked to not even come to the game.
Just, yeah.
Please stay home, actually.
They literally told him to stay home.
Yes, so the Chase Claypool Experience versus the decision to let Lovie Smith fire Ron Rivera, or, you know, not pick up his contract, I guess, but it was, in spirit, a firing. To let Ron Rivera walk as defensive coordinator after the two best seasons that the Bears have had on defense since basically the 80s. And Ron would go on to become stay an excellent defensive coordinator while the Bears' defense immediately fell off for several years. And then would go on to become a fairly successful head coach for quite a while as well. Arguably more successful head coach than Lovie Smith for most of that decade. And entirely the root cause of which entirely seems to be that Ron Rivera wasn't Lovie's personal pick for defense coordinator in the first place. And no matter how successful that pairing ended up being, he refused to be dissuaded from firing the guy so that he could replace him with his good friend Bob Babich. So,
Bob Babich. Best name, worst defensive coordinator I can remember. But great name. Name I love to say. This one, to me, it is maybe more cut and dry than any of the ones we've had before. Solely because, Kyle, you and I both liked the Chase Claypool trade when it happened.
Did defend it, and I think we have to own that.
I liked it too because it was the Bears actually attempting to do something good for a young quarterback. When has that ever happened in our lives?
Beyond that, it worked the next season. When he swung a pick for somebody at the deadline, like we thought we were calling for this, Kyle.
Right.
We were get a wide receiver at the deadline because this draft is bad with wide receivers.
Right.
You're going to use your second round pick on one anyway, so just grab one.
Yeah, I still don't, in theory, hate the idea of trading a second round pick to secure a guaranteed, basically, extension of a player at a premium position in a market that's otherwise not going to let you get a player at that premium position. So I didn't hate that. I really didn't. But yeah, it was obviously, I don't think we obviously didn't factor in enough who was trading him away and what that probably said about him.
Yes.
The same way I wish Dallas all the luck in the world with George Pickens.
Yep.
But when the Steelers choose to get rid of a wide receiver, they have never, ever been wrong. Whether it was Mike Wallace, whether it was Antonio Brown, just
Santonio Holmes, right? When's the last time they were wrong about? Yeah. Yes. But getting rid of Ron Rivera, all the reasons that not just hiring Bruce Arians was stupid. I think everybody in Chicago loved Ron Rivera. Like, there might have been an even bigger cult of personality around him than Lovie Smith.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bad look for Lovie because it was clearly born entirely out of insecurity.
Yes.
He didn't like this rival to his popularity. He didn't like the idea of sharing credit for his scheme. And he also just wanted to install a guy that was much more, you know, loyal to him, who ended up being a terrible defense coordinator. Bob Babbage was awful. So, yeah, it's that I don't like because it's just. And that, to be fair, that one I don't think is a Bears personal decision. I think that one's a decision that Lovie Smith has to own. I don't think that was forced on him in any way. Lovie Smith, that was a Lovie. And I don't know who realistically coming off a Super Bowl could have checked Lovie Smith on that decision, but Lovie Smith, but still, it sucks. It was one of the worst decisions that they made.
Well, yeah. And then I think, you know, to me, it comes down to, it didn't work out with Chase Claypool, very humorously, but you tried to do something good. This is the rare time that the Chicago Bears attempted to do something good and smart, and it didn't work. And there were, you know, there are reasons, maybe they should have considered not doing it, but I was excited about it. I know you were both excited about it. Like, it seemed like they were doing the right thing. I don't think anybody anywhere thought they were doing the right thing in getting rid of Ron Rivera.
Yeah, yeah. The only good thing said about it, basically, was, well, that seems like a really bad decision, but we have to trust Lovie here. And in hindsight, no, we did not have to trust him. It was exactly as vain and petty as it seemed, and it was a bad decision.
Yep. And hey, for years it would haunt him because every time he did not succeed at something, every time something went wrong, the first thing people said was, just bring in Ron Rivera. Fire him and make Ron Rivera.
Yeah, we already had a different, better guy. Yep. We just hire him.
But yeah, I mean, you just talked about it, Kyle. Good process, bad outcome. That's Chase Claypool all the way. He is much more fitting, and we'll get a lot more discussion here in a couple years when we revisit the Bad Bears tournament. Because that's what he is. He was a bad player. I don't think the decision to bring him in was bad. So,
yeah,
Ron Rivera.
So we're advancing Ron Rivera over Chase Claypool. Yes. Okay, all right. Now, if anybody's upset about that, if anybody's really freshly angry about Chase Claypool, don't worry. When we have the next Bad Bears tournament, I think we agreed we'd revisit in 5 years, so we have a couple more years left.
Yeah, we need some time for new faces.
But Chase Claypool's gonna be in there, don't worry.
Chase Claypool is on there. I've seen the list. I'm very excited about the list that I've maintained. But yeah, Chase is gonna get
Nate Davis
a lot of action.
Nate Davis gonna be in there, Chase Claypool's gonna be there. So okay, so yep. We got Ron Rivera will be advancing to face off. The exit of Ron Rivera will be off to face off against the non-exiling of Matt Eberflus. Okay, we're into our last region. The number one seed here, it's an oldie but a goodie, and I'm always the one that brings it up because I think I'm the only one that really remembers it actually happening, but also that's the Rick Meyer trade. And when I said Zach Wilson was going to catch another stray tonight, I think it's important to understand in context that Rick Meyer was not an unproven quarterback at that point. He had started 4 full years in the NFL. There was 4 years of tape of this man. It would be like if someone chose to trade the 11th overall pick for Zach Wilson right now. Like, that was how stupid this decision was. The Bears traded for Zach Wilson, for Rick Meyer, the 90s version of Zach Wilson. And I think that's fair to say, because he went to a religious school, played cupcake schedule, and was drafted largely because he looked good in the jersey. So yeah, the Bears traded for the 90s version of Zach Wilson, traded an 11th overall pick for him after 4 years of this guy proving he was the dirt worst quarterback in the NFL. He did not throw a single touchdown in a Bears uniform. Just a really, truly terrible decision all around. Bad process from the beginning when the trade was made. I was only 9 years old, but I still was like, Rick Beyer? That guy's ass. Like, if they had traded a 7th-round pick for him, I'd have been like, well, you know. It's bad enough that I remember watching the ESPN, you know, when ESPN used to do Who's Number One, when they were talking the Rick Meyer draft pick, there is a clip of one of the Seattle beat writers being like, I remember seeing the Seahawks GM that day, and I'd be like, oh, I heard you traded Rick Meyer. What'd you get for him? And he smiled and looked at me. He's like, what do you think I got for him? And I was like, you did not get a 1st-round pick for Rick Meyer. And they just started laughing. Like, that's how he tells the story, because it was just so self-evidently insane and stupid that happened. And this is a recent addition that I literally just added 5 minutes before we started recording because I thought of it. But this was the decision to, not necessarily to keep Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace the year before 2020, after the 2019 offseason, because I think both of them, their jobs, understandably, were safe coming only 2 years after the 2018, or one bad season. After a 12-4 and an 8-8 season, I don't think they should have been on the hot seat necessarily. But in the 2020 offseason, the Bears clearly realized that Mitch Trubisky was not the guy as the 2019 season progressed. They could have chosen to take their medicine, gotten a different quarterback, started over, accepted that they were going to probably have a bad year in 2020, but left the organization in a better place than they found it. By making that hard choice there. Instead, you got Ryan Pace panicking, opening the money hose, and signing a bunch of horrible contracts in terms of Jimmy Graham. And we've already talked about how the Jimmy Graham contract cost them Charles Leno, arguably.
Yep.
But they signed Jimmy Graham. They threw way too much money at Robert Quinn. I think there were a couple of other contracts in there. But also, then they traded for Nick Foles and took on a big chunk of his contract, and really fucked their cap situation for the next 2 to 3 years, all for the purposes of salvaging a decent season in 2020. And the worst thing about it was, in that sense, in terms of not in what was best for the organization, but in terms of saving their job, it worked, even though it shouldn't have, because it got them to 8-8, which was enough to get them in a bullshit playoff game. But yeah, just an awful series of short-term thinking that at the time was very obvious. And a good friend of mine on Twitter, Jonathan Wood, I remember him writing extensively that offseason as to how horrible all of those contracts were and what a nightmare cap situation it was creating for the Bears in 2022, 2023, because they just refused to accept reality, and that their window had closed by taking the wrong quarterback in terms of Mitch. But yes, the 2020 offseason, just as one decision, is the contender here versus the Rick Meyer trade. So hold on.
I remember what we were going to put here. We were going to put the training camp kicking competition. The decision to have that very public field goal competition that basically destroyed all of the Bears' respectability from then on, and I think broke Matt Nagy completely. Was it that, or was that going to be replacing one of the next ones? I know we talked about that.
Yeah.
Does that kind of count in this bucket? For some reason, now my brain is like, that was a really bad
That was the year before. I don't know. I don't think, because I just don't think that the kicking competition really was that consequential in the long run. I think Matt Nagy's brain broke before that. Matt Nagy's brain broke the minute the kick was missed. I don't think not having the kicking competition would have unbroke his brain.
Okay, I mean, so, I don't think it.
I don't even remember you talking about the kicking competition.
And the other thing we talked about was not even kicking the tires on Kurt Warner when we totally could have. But yeah, I mean, I think all of those things, none of them stand up to Rick Meyer, like. Even not knowing about it at the time, and just like, I think at the time I just wasn't that cognizant of things that were happening on the football field that weren't during a game, unlike you. But Like, that is one of the stupidest trades I've ever seen in my goddamn life. Like, it to me, that's top five with the Herschel Walker deal. It's up there with the Bryce Young trade, you know, that we just pulled off against the Panthers. It's just nobody else thought Rick Meyer was even close to like a fourth round pick, and the Bears are out here tossing a first rounder.
Right. There's
a
first
round pick.
I've done extensive research into this, and I have never found anything that even kind of suggested that the Bears weren't bidding against themselves there. There was nothing that made me think that they had to put a first round pick on the table to get that player.
So obviously you already said it, but you know, when I was doing my research, I almost can't believe he played seven games, did not throw a single touchdown.
We call that the Brody Croyle.
And threw six interceptions, which means as a Chicago Bear, Rick Meyer had a touchdown to interception ratio of infinity.
That's true. You're not wrong. It broke Pro Football Reference, I'm sure.
It's kind of impressive.
I mean, this is one Kyle brings it up all the time. And yes, the first time he brought it up, I was like, why are you talking about Rick Meyer right now? So I know this is near and dear to his heart, but
Kyle was talking shit about Rick Meyer to me when I didn't even really know who Rick Meyer was.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was before my time of actively watching football. I'm not ashamed to say that because we were what, 8 years old.
Yeah, this is some foundational shit for Kyle, and I was like, Rick fucking Meyer? Like, what are you talking about, buddy? And he's like, we traded the 11th overall pick for Rick fucking Meyer. So I just don't see the 2020 offseason competing with this. It's mostly because, honestly, that's not even the only time we've done that as the right. Bears.
Well,
I think it's really funny that the only time I've ever heard you complain about the Bears, or the only time I've ever heard you talk about the Bears opening the money hose, is this specific. Like, usually it's, oh, they could have spent money, they didn't. They should have spent money, they didn't. They refused to spend money. The one time I hear someone talking about the Bears spending money, it's on absolute bullshit.
Yeah. Kyle, do you want to Rick Meyer on? Are you happy with that?
No, I'm fine with that. I was just saying, the only thing that I could say in defense of 2020 here is that, like, I could argue that the 2020 decision fed into the 2021 decisions, which, that, like, arguably it sets off the chain reaction. But we specifically said we're going to try not to argue too many chain reactions because it just gets too tenuous. So yeah, I'm fine with keep Rick Meyer. But I was going to say it's arguable that you don't end up with the decision to keep Pace and Nagy for 2021 and set the Justin Fields era off terribly if you don't have that spending spree in 2020. And then if you don't do the Justin Fields thing, you probably don't do the Matt Eberflus, Caleb Williams thing, blah, blah, blah. So that's the argument I could make, but I agree that
I do buy those things, but
we don't want to spiral out. Yeah.
It's important to note that on one we still have and one we will obviously get back to, we can do so much better in terms of opportunity cost than maybe.
Yeah.
They don't keep those coaches.
Exactly. Okay, so Rick Meyer is advancing on. So far, all of our one seeds were picked well. They've all advanced. But our two and three seeds have also been picked well because each one of those has been a close battle, I feel like. So our last matchup then in the first round in this region is the two seed here is the Bears hiring Jerry Angelo in 2001, but not saying anything against Jerry yet at this stage. God knows he made his mistakes, but the Bears hired Jerry Angelo in 2001. I believe it was officially June when he was finally hired. So they hired a search firm to hire a GM, and they finally hired a GM long after he could have made any decisions as far as the head coach, after another GM who already knew he was a dead man walking was allowed to run your draft. And then you bring in Jerry Angelo. And Jerry Angelo is brought in, and he's not allowed to bring in his own head coach because he 100%, if he had been brought in January, like you normally bring in a fucking general manager, he would have 100% fired Dick Geron after two completely pointless, awful first seasons that Dick Geron had had. He would not have kept Dick Geron whatsoever. And I don't know what he would have done in the draft, but I'm willing to bet he would not have spent his first two picks on David Terrell and Anthony Thomas. Just a hunch. So you bring this coach in, and because they bring him in June, and because he's not allowed to hire a head coach and more importantly, fire Dick Duran when he would have fired Dick Duran in January, and everyone knows he would have. You have Dick Duran pull off that freak 13-3 season in 2001, and then Angelo can't fire him. You can't fire the literal NFL coach of the year. He has to give Duran an extension that he didn't want to give him. And then you're locked into two more wasted seasons with Dick Durans when that magic goes away, and you have to keep Duran for 2002, 2003. And the Jerry Angelo era truly doesn't get to begin for in the way he would have liked until 2004, when he was allowed to hire for the first time Lovie Smith, the coach he wanted. So that's so, and that all comes back to the Bears not having a true team president at that point in time, not having just they're fresh off the Michael McCaskey as team president reign of terror. They're fresh off announcing the hire of Dave McGinnis when they had actually hired him, and to the point that they had to hire a fucking search firm to tell them who to hire as a GM, and the search firm took so damn long that they let a dead man walking GM hire a bust in David Terrell, or draft a bust in David Terrell, and kept Dick Duran around, setting off a sequence of having to keep Dick Duran around for three more years.
I did, before we talk about anything else, I just wanted to throw this out there. I saw this thing like a week ago, and I sent it to you guys, that the Chiefs have never won Coach of the Year. Never once, which seems completely insane.
Wait, yeah, that seems haven't gotten a single
Andy
coach
Reid
of the
has
year?
Never won Coach of the Year with the Chiefs. But the Bears have three coaches of the year: Dick Duran, Lovie Smith, and Matt fucking Nagy. Can you fucking believe that?
That is truly incredible.
Anyway, just remember that, folks. I have that in my brain that Andy Reid with the Chiefs has never won that, but his offensive coordinator, who got sent back to him in exile, has. And I don't know what to do with that information. Anyway, continue.
That is truly incredible. That's okay. That's blowing
it's
my
pretty
mind.
Pretty fucked
right?
up.
Okay, I don't have
right?
time for that to blow my mind right now. But like,
yeah,
okay,
that's
wild.
I'll give you. You know, I guess you know there are years I can see you saying, "Well, Lovie Smith had a pretty good year." You know, I guess maybe you give Matt Nagy it for.
Matt Nagy, what for his first season? Because the thing is, with Coach of the Year, you really only get it if you unexpectedly win games with a
right.
shit team. And that's the
right.
Bears are a universally
that's why Andy Reid doesn't have
team.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I pointed this out too with, and I ended up being dead right because I always am, with Matt.
We're going to talk about how Matt, sometimes with, you aren't, Kyle.
With Brian, no, that's never happened. With Brian Daboll a couple years ago, I said the worst thing that happens in the NFL, and this is why my eyes are also currently on Washington, because when you have that coach who unexpectedly succeeds year one with that roster that everyone thinks is trash, it almost always is a curse because it raises expectations higher than they should be. And all they can do is disappoint because in year two, all of the little gimmicks and everything that those coaches usually pull off, they don't work anymore, and then you're just left with a bad roster. And that's what happened with the Giants, Brian Daboll's first year. He jerry-rigged everything to get the bare minimum functional season out of Daniel Jones, and they cursed themselves by doing that because then they extended him, and everyone already saw all the tricks that you pulled to make him look okay for 1 year, and they adjusted. And that's what happened with Matt Nagy. His 1 year, he used every trick in the book to make Mitch Trubisky look functional, and then everyone adjusted. I remember it happening, you know, in 2008 with the Dolphins and Tony Sperano the year they deployed the Wild. It's always, in a lot of ways, Coach of the Year is just a curse to win because it's just basically it's saying, like, you overachieved and you will fall to earth. That's like I said, I'm watching Washington right now because everyone thought that last year with Dan Quinn and that roster looking really bad on paper, but they massively overachieved. So the odds that they disappoint this year, that's what I'm keeping an eye on there. But yeah, it's winning Coach of the Year is often it's very often a curse, or it's a sign of like this guy's going to be fired in 3 years.
I really fucking derailed this. I'm sorry. I just had to share that.
That is interesting. That is fascinating. Okay, and then Angelo, the Angelo hiring timeline is going up against our final nominee of the evening, the three seed in this region. Rex is our quarterback. And now to keep this, specifically to keep this from being a repeat of the Bad Bears tournament, where we made the whole thing be about the opportunity cost of Rex Grossman over multiple years, I am specifically talking solely about, in the 2006 season, Lovie Smith's refusal to even consider turning quarterback over to either Brian Griese or Kyle Orton, and just insisting every week, Rex is our quarterback because the Bears kept winning games. And do I know if the Bears would have won the Super Bowl if they had turned to Brian Griese at any point that season? I don't know. Certainly, I am no fan of Brian Griese. Do I know that they would have won the Super Bowl if they had just kept Kyle Orton in there? Yes, absolutely.
Fuck yes.
And anyone who disagrees should be burned at the stake as a heretic. But
they're fucking stupid if they think that dumb thought.
Yeah. So that's our final nominee. So guys, hiring Jerry Angelo in June of 2001, or refusing to bench Rex Grossman at any point in 2006. What are we thinking? What are our thoughts?
This is a tough one. This is a tough one, man. So hiring any GM after the draft is really stupid on its face. But there is an argument to be made that this was an ongoing decision, like a series of failures. Unfortunately, the other thing that it's up against is the exact same thing. It's after every game, Lovie Smith saying, no, there's no way I'm getting off of Rex. He was awesome to start the year. We're going to ride this out. Even seeing that, like,
well, and just citing
a Trent Dilfer would have probably won the Super Bowl for the Bears that year.
Right. And just citing quarterback wins, which is already one of the dumbest statistics as it is. But like, yep, we've won 8 games with Rex as our quarterback. I mean, you won. I mean, his performance in the Cardinals game, like, okay, they won a game where he had against the Vikings where he had literally a 0 passer rating. But yeah, I mean, that was a truly awful decision.
Okay, I put this forth. I almost think Rex and his opportunity cost over his whole career works against him in this tournament, because with this specific series of decisions, I completely understand why Lovie did it, because from literally his introductory press conference, Lovie Smith built himself off of supporting Rex Grossman. Rex Grossman was his guy. We're going to give Rex his chance. Rex is going to be our quarterback. Through the injuries, he stuck with this guy. He would come out and show flashes, and he would always put just the Bears' future on hold because Rex Grossman is coming. And this is what players love about Lovie Smith. He's so loyal. He sticks by his word. Everybody loves this guy. And he just kept hanging on to Rex. So when it came to this, and finally the kid put it together to start the season, this team is, it looks like, on a trajectory with the Super Bowl, which ended up being true. I understand what's going on in his head. He's like, I've done it the entire time I've been Bears head coach. Of course I'm going to stick with him the rest of the way. Of course I'm going to see this through. So I understand his decision-making here. I don't understand anything about what the Bears were fucking thinking with not having, with keeping, if they didn't have a GM during that draft, it would have been better. It would have been better if, like, McCaskey just thought, I could probably fucking do this, and did it, honestly, than it was with a guy who they knew they were going to fire, and then throwing that shit at Jerry Angelo after the fact. I don't understand it. Whereas
it's a rare, Lovie. You know, we get to see a front office version of like the way the Bears manage timeouts. You know, it's just, oh, we couldn't get our shit together in time. Here's David Terrell.
Wow. Holy shit.
We couldn't get our shit together in time. Here's David Terrell.
Amazing. Yeah? Amazing, Jim.
Wow. Okay.
Holy shit.
I'm almost going to vote for it.
Eric, did you load that up before? Were you waiting?
No. You were just talking, and I was like, this sounds familiar. And I was like, wait a minute. This is like watching the Bears offense. Like, this is every time we've watched them not able to finish a quarter with a score because they don't have any timeouts left because they spent them on fucking around.
Exactly correct.
This is hard for me because my instinct is to defend Jerry Angelo, but this is not about Jerry Angelo. This is specifically about how he was dealt a bad hand.
Yeah.
Well, no, and the thing is that Jerry Angelo, like, I don't know if you can call it recency bias. It's been 15 years, but, like, I think we have a sour taste in our mouth because of how the Jerry Angelo regime, like, ended and because of the flaws of Jerry Angelo over time. But there is no denying that Jerry Angelo, more than any other individual, dragged the Bears as an organization into something resembling a modern NFL team. They're still not quite there, but, like, Jerry Angelo was the first real GM that they had had in 30 years. He built he had a philosophy. He built he actually did a pretty good job drafting there for several years at the beginning. You know, he gave you Charles Tillman. He gave you Lance Briggs. The Lovie Smith hire, you know, say what you will about how it ended, but the Lovie Smith hire was objectively a good one. Jerry Angelo, I don't think the Bears would have been worse off if they had hired Jerry Angelo in January 2001 like a real GM and let him do his fucking job. So yeah, I'm defending Jerry Angelo there, and that, yeah, I think they should have a real team with a real owner who can handle these interviews himself might have made that decision earlier when he was supposed to. But yeah, it's Jerry Angelo had to wait until his fourth year as the GM to really get to run things the way he wanted. And that's arguably, if you believe the David Kaplan version of event, that's the same thing that's happening to Ryan Poles right now. So they still haven't learned. Ryan Poles was brought in as GM, but then told basically, well, you have to choose either Matt Eberflus or Dan Quinn or Jim Caldwell as your head coach. You don't actually get to pick your own head coach. And then you also don't get to fire him until after year three. So, you know, they maybe didn't let Ryan Poles actually do his job until year four. Same thing with Jerry Angelo. He wasn't really allowed to start building things the way he really wanted until year four because he got stuck in an arranged marriage with Dick Geron, and then Dick Geron had the flukiest fluke season of all time that set their whole organizational schedule back multiple years because of it.
Yeah, and I mean, for as much as we shit on Jerry Angelo, we don't do it that much on this podcast. He's just, like, far and away the best GM the Bears have had in our lifetimes. Like, it's not even
right. Of all the things we have to be mad about, am I really going to waste my energy on being mad at Jerry Angelo?
Right. Like, is that really the guy? Like, I mean, I know that he's not. That Bears GM is not held up to the standard of, like, you know, pretty much every other team's GM position, except for, like, the Jets or the Browns or whatever. But he is, like, by far, even more obviously than, like, Lovie Smith, just the best we've ever had there. So I don't feel bad being like, yeah, I bet if Jerry Angelo was hired a little bit before that, he wouldn't have drafted both Michigan guys in the first round. He maybe would have picked a couple of better guys. It's definitely possible. So yeah, I would.
My hesitation here is I'm concerned that we have basically talked ourselves out of Rex before we even opened the bracket by basically shrinking down what this is allowed to mean,
yes,
to an amount so small that,
well, you know what, Eric, these are our rules, and we spent the entire fucking tournament talking about
how I'm thinking about how I feel about it. Like, you know, we always come back. They would have won a Super Bowl. That's what all of this is for. They would have won a Super Bowl if they had had a quarterback who just wasn't ass. I'm not even asking them to have a quarterback who was good. I'm asking to have a guy who just laid down after scoring a touchdown on the opening kickoff.
It needs to be said, too, that, like, they basically neutered Rex completely and told him, like, you know, just don't turn the ball over, and made him a worse version of Kyle Orton, of Kyle Orton's rookie season by the time we made it to the Super Bowl. I mean, you know how I feel about Rex Grossman. Obviously, folks, if you don't know, we do have a lot of new listeners between then and now. Go back, listen to the Curtisinus Cade McNown Cap of Shame tournament.
I don't believe that Travis has ever been as angry at either of us as he was when Rex didn't win the first Bad Bears tournament.
So mad.
We have lost that podcast a time, but it took me probably more than 24 hours to cool down when
he wouldn't talk
one.
He would not talk to us. It was great. He was so mad.
I was really upset that Cade McDonald won the first one. So you guys knew coming into this one 2 years ago, I was like, this is going to be fucking Rex Grossman without question. But I think it comes down to the decision. And I think just the decision on its face is so blindingly stupid to have a lame duck GM make draft picks and then have the search firm bring you a different GM after that, as opposed to, like, why is Lovie Smith sticking with Rex? I know why he's doing that.
He was doing it for bad reasons. That was also a bad decision.
But that bad decision he had made, like, game after game and year after year up to that point, and it led him to the Super Bowl is the problem. So I understand.
That makes it worse to me that he made the same bad decision so many times, but I get it.
Well, now, if we're counting the cascade effect, yes. If this is every time Lovie Smith said, no, it's fine, we have Rex Grossman, you know, maybe we're just going to have Rex Grossman win another tournament here. But if it's just this decision, if it's just
I don't think this can win either way. Maybe that's why I'm sticking to it so hard. I don't think this is Rex is going to run away with it.
I feel like I want to stick with the Angelo thing, but maybe that's just because it's
that's why there are three of us, guys. You're allowed to outvote me here.
It's because it's when we talk about just kind of like when we worst Bears games of our lives, like worst Bears decisions of our lives, much like the keeping Eberflus and stuff. This is a decision that only happens because of the Bears being the Bears, is that you can't, you're run by the football Habsburgs and they're so incompetent that they can't even just they don't have a team president in place because it was freshly off of having to fire their dipshit son for being so bad at the job that you don't have a team president in place. So you don't just have the normal NFL team process where your team president hires a GM who hires a coach. You got to hire a search. You have to outsource the job of running your football team to a search firm that takes so damn long that you get a GM who's then not even allowed to do the number two, the two things that a GM does, which is make a decision at quarterback and make a decision at coach. And he's not then, and then he gets caught in a cycle where he can't do that for two more years. So it's just so uniquely Bears that happened. And that's why I'm sticking with that.
I mean, I agree with that. I think beyond the tiebreaker I was already talking about, where it's just this in the moment, this is so obviously blindingly stupid. It's also, yeah, it's a Bears mistake. The Rex thing, that's really a Lovie Smith mistake. That is, and it's a mistake that is born of what is good about Lovie Smith. Whereas this Jerry Angelo shit is born of everything that is wrong with the Bears organization. And it's just a reminder that things just haven't really changed. We still have the same fucking people in charge. We're dealing with the same shit. And it has been 20 years, and it's still the same thing. It's so Bears, it just never ends, right? Like, there's other things on this list where it's just, I don't want to turn this into the most Bears mistake of all time.
I feel like that would be a very different list. That would be a very, very different list.
We do make the same mistakes over and over again. And it's just, if you told me without names what happened here, there was an NFL franchise who hired a search firm to get a GM, and it took so long that the old GM, who knew he was getting fired, made your draft pick shittily, because why wouldn't he? And then you hired the new guy, and he was stuck with the bad head coach who he couldn't fire, and he was stuck with a bunch of draft picks that he didn't make. I would immediately identify that as the Bears. I wouldn't guess the Browns. I wouldn't guess the Jets. I wouldn't guess the Bengals. I'd be like, that's a fucking Bears move. And I would be correct. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with Kyle. I think Jerry Angelo moves on here and makes a very interesting matchup with Rick Myer.
Right. Yeah,
is that officially voted 2-1
for sure.
I think that's our first. Is that our first?
I'm honestly undecided, but I don't have to decide. So
Eric's here to break ties, not make them, bro.
Okay, so all right, so we have our Elite Eight matchup set then.
That's right. I was thinking about pushing through this, but Kyle, I can tell you're about to fall asleep, buddy.
I am yawning, but yeah. I can do it. I can do it.
Don't mind making a second episode of it.
Let's save this. Let's come back to it next week. I want some fire in the gut for this.
That's true. You want me my best here. You do. Yes. So just to end it, I'll list off the matchups for people to mull over. And obviously people send Travis your Spotify comments as to how you're feeling about these matchups.
Yes.
So we ended up with 3-1 versus 2 matchups, but 1-1 versus 3. So we have next week we'll be debating Mitch Trubisky versus the Cedric Benson Thomas Jones dilemma. We will be debating Trestman over Arians versus Martz trading Olsen. We will be debating keeping Matt Eberflus over getting rid of Ron Rivera. And we will be debating the Rick Meyer trade versus the Jerry Angelo hiring decision. And I guess I didn't really intend it to, but I guess that makes sense that those two end up going up because those are the two oldest options on the list. So that really stretches back into the folds of memory to get to those two. But yeah, otherwise you have some.
It's very bold of you to assume that I remember Rick Meyer.
I don't know. I know you don't. It's like, Travis doesn't even remember Rick Meyer.
I don't.
Every version of every tournament we've ever had when Rick Meyer comes up, I'm the only one that remembers, and I always have to lay out the numbers for how fucking bad it was.
Until I started reading for this episode, the only thing I knew about Rick Meyer was he's that fucking guy Kyle hates.
Yeah. I hate him so much. I hate him so much.
All right, well, I'll see you two next week, and we'll wrap this thing up.
All right. Good night, gentlemen.
Bye.
Way out on that bumpers road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people I show do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.